After Buzzers, thank you so much for tuning in to another Orphan Black After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are covering Season 4, Episode 7, The Anti-Socialism of Sex. And we have a very special guest here Skyping in from Canada, so please stay tuned.
You're tuning in to the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh yeah. Hello, AfterBuzzers. Thank you so much for tuning in to this really amazing episode of Orphan Black for our after show here at AfterBuzz TV. I am your host, Sam Davidson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at SamD43. And before we announce our very special guest who's Skyping in, I have two beautiful ladies here, guys. Introduce yourselves. Let us know we can find you on Twitter.
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique, and you can find me at Joelle Monique.
Hey, I'm Kelly McInerney. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Holly Weirdo.
And of course, guys, we have the amazing Kevin Hanchard here Skyping in. Woo! Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How's it going? All right, Kevin, where can everybody find you on social media for those that don't know?
On Twitter, I'm at Kevin Hanchard, and on Instagram, where I've only made one post because I'm technically illiterate, I'm at KBoogieDown.
Yeah, if I were you guys, I would definitely follow him on Instagram because it sounds very fascinating.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm an amazing Instagram follow.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm like so fangirling and thrilled to have you. We were testing it out before, and Kevin couldn't hear us, and I was just like, I love you.
And I missed all that love. Oh my god,
so unrequited. And then you finally heard me, and I was like, yes.
I was just quoting Home Alone, just saying, Kevin!
Kevin!
Well, tonight was really fun, and Art kicked some serious ass.
Yes!
Which was a lot of, like, it was kind of sexy, I don't know.
Wrong girl, yeah, that's right. That's exactly how I intended
it. All right, so again, guys, we are going to go through the storyline by clone. Of course, starting off with Sarah, and Sarah's feeling really crappy. Mm. Mrs. S blames her for Kendall's death, which, what do you think, Kevin? Is that warranted?
Whether it's warranted or not, that's sort of just where she is emotionally at the time. You know, when you go through emotional situations and tragedies like that, you lash out, and you usually lash out at the people closest to you. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, there is some blame to go around. Whether it's completely justified or not, you know, is debatable and remains to be seen. But you can understand exactly where she's coming from.
Absolutely. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you know, when you're that emotionally, like, hurt, you mm-hmm. kind of want to blame somebody. And even though it's not right at the time, I'm sure, like, S regrets saying...
I need S to get her stuff together. I'm sorry, I don't feel bad for S. S wanted to kill her mother. And then, like, this is literally the only option they had to save, like, I don't want to say countless because we can count the clones, but a lot of other lives... was to kind of try to make this deal. And my roommate brought up a good point. Like, if you're so worried about your mom, like, you could have followed her out to the car. Like, there was a lot of options to protect your mother that kind of fell through. And I think to blame it on Sarah at this, like, she's under so much stress and duress and kind of spiraling downward. And the fact that Felix just pops up immediately and is like, what have you done? To me says a lot about where, I should have known how Sarah was feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we really haven't seen Sarah on a bender yet because it's all kind of happened before the show started. Mm. In the pilot episode, she was just getting back from a bender, I think. But we never actually saw it. So this episode, we got to see it.
Right.
Hard.
Yeah, that meltdown was intense.
A very intense meltdown. But Art actually goes to see Mrs. S., and, you know, he's part of this, whether he likes it or not. And they talk, and she tells Art, you know, that it's Detective Duco that was right. The one that shot Kendall. And what do you think, Kevin? Is Art in this because, like, now he doesn't have a choice? Or he really cares and wants to avenge Beth? Or, like, what is his kind of motivation at this point?
The answer to your question is yes.
To everything.
To all of the above, right? Yes. Like, it all started with him trying to find out what happened to Beth and to his partner, and that sort of police partner duty that loyalty, I should say, that he had towards her. But, you know, once you start going down that path,
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And you get yourself completely involved in it. There's no turning back. But even, you know, Duco had those really spooky and ominous, that spooky and ominous message that he gave to him right after he got his ass kicked. You know, saying they're watching you, man. Like they know what happened. They know you put the gun in Maggie Chen's hand, and they're looking out for you. And Art's got, you know, kids and an ex-wife and, you know, people that he cares about that apparently are at risk now. So he's all in. He's been all in for a while, but the stakes are even higher now. So what can you do at this point? You can't jump out. You've got to take care of what you need to take care of and handle what you need to handle.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, I mean, we got introduced to Art's daughter, what was it, in the first episode of this season?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, where is she? Like,
and where has she been? And where is she now?
If you guys weren't watching, I put her to bed and ever since.
She's just been sleeping.
That's what she does. She likes to sleep.
What an easy kid.
Right?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy one. Well, yeah, I mean, as Kevin mentioned, like, Art, after he goes, okay, this Detective Duco, enough is enough. I am going to go beat him down. And it's one of those things that when your victim is, like, kind of laughing at you, that must be a very frustrating situation to be in. Because as he's bleeding from his face, he's just like,
kind of makes you more furious.
He says, give me some more, is what he says. That's all you got? Give me some more. There's nothing more frustrating than that, right?
Yeah.
But that's these are things that aren't written in the script. It's, the lines are there, but the fact that he's still sort of chuckling and, I can't remember if that old give me more shoe leather, give it the old shoe leather line was in there or not, but that's Gord Rand, who's an amazing actor who I've not really known as a friend, but I've known of reputation wise for years as an amazing theater actor, and to get to work with him on the show has been an absolute dream, because he's just that good. He's that good that when you see him get his ass kicked on TV, you cheer. you're glad that he's getting his butt wet.
One of our listeners,
that's a testament to how well he
one of our listeners, Jessica Iverson, life. Described it as the best ass kicking.
Someone said that?
Yeah. We have a live chat also on YouTube where fans can comment, and they are very happy to have you. And yeah, it was the best ass kicking.
It's one and the same. It's all the same.
Yeah. I mean, the way Duco was acting, he was like, oh, more. Thank you.
Definitely sells the creepiness, you know?
Yeah.
Weird. The glasses and the beard, you know, that's just that combination is just never a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That trench coat, too, with the like slim, like stick figure with the big trench coat. It's just very classically menacing.
Yeah, it's very evil Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. And the specific glasses, they're like serial killer ones, you know? Definitely like,
yeah.
What's his face?
Yeah, they're those big Coke bottle, they're so thick you can see the teeth kind of glasses. Yeah. It's definitely weird. It's definitely weird.
And I loved when you were kicking his ass and you said, you know, like, this is for Beth, and then like, this is for, you know, blah blah blah, like all these people. And what you're doing for Beth, kind of, it's still, like, she's still present in the show, especially this season, and I want to know, a lot of fans want to know, what was it like having to, you know, getting to interact with, like, kind of the OG, you know, of the show?
Yeah, well, it's been great. I mean, because in all of season one, I was interacting with Beth, or at least I thought I was.
Yeah, well, but you weren't.
Or thought he was. So, you know, it's weird because the whole season one, when he was interacting with Beth, the whole sort of motivation and the whole obstacle is what is wrong with this girl? He knows that there's stuff wrong as far as the drug abuse and as far as, you know, the emotional journey that she was on, but there was just something else that was off that he couldn't put his thumb on. Now he realizes it wasn't her in the first place and she was dead. But but in this instance, he's actually, you know, he's working with his partner. And for me as an actor, it was a great thing to experience, you know, Tat as Beth, you know, Beth mm-hmm. being Beth. It was it's a whole different thing. And just each of the characters is so clearly and specifically delineated. It was just a whole different person. And it was a lot of fun to experience that energy on set. It was great.
Do you feel as though, you know, Beth was kind of like a love of yours that we learned this season, at least sexually, you know, you guys had something going on. Is Sarah more of a sister now, or do you think there's some transference that could possibly happen?
I think there's transference. Look,
what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do to Art?
It's not us.
I don't know if there's... I think he sees that Sarah's got a lot of other stuff going on, and I don't think there's any sort of I wouldn't say emotional, but you know, romantic interest or physical interest in Sarah. No. That's just my. I have an opinion on it. Who knows what John and Graham are going to throw into the mix? Because you know, I think Tatiana has made out with every single one of us now. He's like, so there's nothing that's sacred at this point. But I really do think that Beth is where his emotional investment or romantic investment sort of began and ended as far as the sisters are concerned. And Sarah is, I mean, one thing that Art has always said is that she reminds him so much of Beth. She is more like her than Sarah even understands or realizes, that they're both so dogged and determined and they don't give up. And it's frustrating, but it's an admirable quality as well. And I think it's the quality that drew him to Beth in the first place. And I talk about it in a couple of interviews that I've done, that there's some scenes that that never made the show, that I even auditioned with, that we never actually shot, where Art talks about the fact that Beth was sort of a tough nut and no one wanted to be her training officer, but Art did because he recognized those sort of qualities in her and admired them, whereas other people ran in the opposite direction. You know, and he knew it would get her in trouble, and ultimately it did. Like, it's the kind of thing that, you know, made her beat the crap out of Evie Cho, right? Because yeah. I think he could recognize a bit of himself in her. You know, and once again, there it goes. It manifests itself with him beating the crap out of Duco, right? There's a valve totally. That sometimes goes off and you just can't rein in that beast. And he saw it in her, and he has it himself. So it's a long way to answer a very simple question.
No, it's great.
I just think that romantically, Beth is where it begins and ends. But Sarah possesses so many of those Beth-like qualities that he can't help but want to help her. In order to help himself.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of Sarah, you know, she's going down this spiral and goes to the bar and gets in some craziness. What did you... I personally very much liked this part of the episode. It's fun, and it's kind of like, I'm glad to see this side of her. What did you guys feel about the whole craziness that she does?
I didn't think it was fun.
No, it terrified me. Yeah. I was like, you have a child, and you need to go home. I was very... Not that I'm against Mother's Clubbing, because, you know, safe and healthy and sane.
To me, it totally sounded like you were against Mother's Clubbing.
No, never! Moms, get your freak on. But, you know, be safe. Be like, careful. And she was not. She was on a bender, and that was scary.
Having like a threesome and like doing coke and stuff. That's a little bit excessive for a mom's night out.
For a recovered addict mom's night out.
You guys obviously don't live in suburban Canada. That's a typical mom. Nowhere to be found. I haven't seen my wife in about 4 days. And I'm doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Maybe you should look at like the Neolution Club, you know, just to be sure.
I'll bring a picture around. Say, have you seen this lady? She's my wife.
She comes home and she has like a fake eye. She's like,
exactly. You know what? I thought it was it. I think you guys are kind of right. It was excessive, but it was good excessive. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
the thing about our show is that I kind of like is that everyone is kind of dirty. You know, everyone's got a bit of grit and grime on them. And Sarah is the heroine. She's like the protagonist of the show, but she's not perfect, and she never has been perfect. She's never been presented as perfect. Mm-hmm. And she went way over the line. She didn't just tip. She jumped across the line and said, I'm out. I'm leaving my kid. I'm leaving all my responsibility. And I'm going to, dance with death for a little bit. And that's kind of what she, and you know, that might be me being a little prudish and excessive, say dancing with death. But you know, when you've got those responsibilities to go that far, to me is, you know, but it makes you realize that she's human and she's not without flaws. She's not a Lily White storybook hero or heroine. She's got warts. She's got problems. She's got issues and she's trying to fight through them and at the same time do the right thing. So the question then becomes, can she fight through those demons? Can she conquer those demons and find her way, you know, back to that sort of, you know, center line, the through line that'll get her to where it is she needs to be, or will those demons devour her and eat her up? So, you know, we'll see what happens. But for me, it was uncomfortable to watch, once again, not in a prudish way, but just to say, oh my God, like, you don't see that on television. You don't see a hair, like, you see someone go, oh, I'm so mad at you know, my boyfriend, so I'm going to sleep with someone else. You know, you see that kind of thing, and they wake up the next morning and go, oh, what an idiot I was. But she went, like, way off. Like, she was just looking for something from almost anybody and wherever she could find love and value and a misplaced or misjudged sense of self-worth, she was gonna get it, you know. And I say kudos to the guys for putting that in there, and Tat just, you know, knocked the hell out of those scenes. So it's messy and it's difficult, but I think it's real and it's human, because that kind of stuff happens all the time, to be honest.
I think, though, I was just nervous about it, too, because I'm like, something bad's going to happen to her. This show, she never goes right. So that's why I was uncomfortable. That,
right?
Yeah.
Because we are all so invested in the show and in her character and her finding out what's going on, that you all sort of, like, everybody sort of watches it like this and goes, oh, my God, like, is this how the show's going to end? Like, just, you know, like, is something's going to happen here and, you know, it's going to end up like Lost or something, where it's just kind of like,
And particularly when she shows up on the bridge and then we're getting these, and even before, when we're getting flashes of Beth, and we know that she's kind of got this, I don't know if we want to call it psychic connection, or if it's, you know, a full crazy hallucination, or
just drugs.
What's bringing Beth back to her, but to see Beth start showing up and knowing and watching her, like, downward spiral from the beginning, and then kind of seeing that mirrored in Sarah, like, this episode, I was like, we cannot lose, because we predicted earlier on that we think a clone might die this season because it feels like it's time. And I was, like, so concerned. I'm like, Sarah, no, get off the bridge. Like, there's no one here to help you.
But Felix was there, and that's
Thank God.
Is that, you know, Felix and Sarah have had a very rough time of it this season thus far, but he finally realized, like, that Sarah's the glue that keeps everybody together, and he's the one that kind of saves her. So in a way, Felix is the thing that she needs, as well as Kira. And that was a part that I was just like, you know, you're just going to leave Kira. That's so unlike you. Come on, girl.
Mm-hmm.
But Felix is the one that was able to really bring her back down.
Yeah, the fan, the brainy Letum, says Felix did call her the glue that keeps them all together. And we're really seeing, like, without Sarah, that family starts to crumble pretty quickly.
And
yeah, without a doubt, she definitely is. And, you know, and I think Jordan talked about it on one of the other interviews that he did, that the thing that Beth didn't have was a Felix.
She
didn't have a Felix that she could... You know, she didn't have anybody to turn to. I mean, she had Art and she had all, but not in the same way, not someone who was involved in the whole thing to the same degree, someone who she could, who could talk her off the ledge.
Literally, you know?
Better term, literally talk her off the ledge. And, you know, if maybe, and I think that's part of the guilt and part of the thing that that Sarah feels, is that she was right there but wasn't able to save her. She didn't have any idea what was going on, and it was sort of a, oh my God, there's someone who looks like me and now she's dead sort of moment. But I think part of that, you know, I think anybody feels that if they see someone, you know, unfortunately take their own life, you're racked with that guilt. So you know, it was important for us to see that Sarah had Felix, and no matter what their squabbles were, no matter what they were fighting about, they're still siblings.
Yeah.
And he was going to put all of that other stuff aside when he knows, or when he knew that she really needed him the most. So yeah. I think that was a great scene.
It really was. And I just really want to make sure we touch upon Kira a little bit, yeah. because Kira had some crazy eyes this episode.
Ooh, poor Kira. She can feel all of their emotions. Like, this was a roller coaster and a half for her to try to just sit in that little room and deal with all these very adult emotions that are running a spectrum, like, from the craziness of Alice to what her mother was dealing with to Cosima's issues. Like, I felt very...
She just took it out on Minecraft, you know?
She sure did.
She was building some crazy worlds there on Minecraft. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. But yeah, it's a crazy ride that she's on as well, too. And who knows what's happening, because she's a kid. And we're just, you know, she's experiencing something that we don't know about, because we haven't fully unraveled who, what Kira is. You know, exactly. We know that she can be hit by a car going about, you know, 60 miles an hour and get up and be unscathed by it. But what does that mean? We know that she says she knows what the other sisters are thinking, but what does that mean? She knew that the Neolutionists were coming. What does that mean? Like, so I'm curious to find out, because they don't tell me. But I think she's going to be a really integral part in where the story goes moving forward. I mean, she already is, but I think even more so as time goes by.
Yeah, absolutely. I really can't wait. It's one of my favorite parts of the series and, you know, this season specifically. Let's get into Allison a little bit, you know, because Art is tied, though, to the Hendrix.
Right.
Yikes.
Unfortunately. It's messy with them.
It was really sad to see Allison break down, because she's very controlled and does not do this often. And she's writing a condolence letter to Mrs. S, sending her flowers. They're all very devastated by Kendall's death.
Yeah.
And, you know, then Donnie comes in and asks to help her. And, you know, he wants to cancel the party for
the
daughter.
I just say I'm loving their relationship more and more. Like, I feel like I didn't understand it. And I always was like, you're so mean to Donnie. And it made me really dislike Alice. But to see Donnie step up and be like, look, this is just how she is. And I love my wife. And I plan to be there for her. Their relationship is everything. It's so beautiful.
I know. Yeah.
And she kind of needed to break down, I feel like, because she's been so, like, I'm okay the whole season. So it was kind of good to see that she release, you know?
Yeah.
Even though it was sad, but.
Let's talk about Art's involvement in this entire thing, because, you know, as we know, Donnie, the police end up taking over the slumber party of Gemma's and arrest Donnie for the narcotics thing.
Horrible scene. Yeah. The guns pointed at children.
But the music was funny. I was kind of weirdly laughing.
Soccer ball cookies flying all over the place.
Oh, my God.
It was amazing. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was just the genius of, like, you know, the producers, the director, the writers. It was really, you know, one of those dark but, like, funny, ironic scenes. But Art, I always forget that Art is tied to the Hendrix now, too. Not only because of the clones, but, like, because he is involved in kind of everything that they have done a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, you know, as far as, like, your involvement and then how you think that is going to end up possibly playing out and hurting your character?
Oh, gosh, I don't know, but you know that it will, right? I don't know how it's going to play itself out, how it's going to manifest itself, but there's way too much meat on that bone for them to let that slide. There's no two ways about it. But I mean, and I think it's sort of encapsulated in what Art said about the fact that, you know, the fact that the police department, or he didn't know that Donnie and Allison were selling drugs out of bubbles, selling prescription drugs. And he had that big clone dinner there with all the sisters, right? So that puts him completely in the middle of it and puts him at risk. And the big thing for Art is he's taken risks before. He put the gun in Maggie Chen's hand. He's fudged, you know, things a little bit, and he's used his position on the police force to find out information and whatnot. But those are sort of things that he's willingly decided to do, and he sort of can take control of. But now this is something that is out of his control. So now he's no longer in the driver's seat, which makes him extremely uncomfortable, because even though Art is pretty much a clean cop who, you know, who does what he needs to do to get where he needs to get to, he's very meticulous and very specific about what he does in order to do that. And now that's all been taken away from him. So we'll see how he deals with it. I'm curious to see how he deals with it. But, you know, as I said, there's a whole lot there that's going to sort of knock him off of his center point, knock him off his balance. And I'm curious to see how it all plays itself out.
Oh, snap.
Poor Art. Jesus. Well, I know. I'm really scared for Art. And I can't lose him, you know? I just can't. Like, me as a person, and you can't either, because, like, obviously, for a job and a life, like, this is... But, you know, you do have other stuff going on, Kevin, which is pretty awesome. Some cool stuff. You're me in Suicide Squad soon.
Hell yeah.
Woo! It's gonna be pretty dope.
It should be fun.
Yeah, it should. Talking about dope, let's talk about Cosima.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's the greatest segue ever.
Yes, Cosima is dope, and then we just see her, like, sitting in, like, plants of weed. Just...
Which is probably the best place for her right now, let's be real. Like, Cosima had a tragic evening. Like, as bad as it was for everybody, Cosima got the worst of it. Mm-hmm. I was glad to see that she was just meditating with her flowers for a little bit. Just coming into
but
her
But she
own.
Wasn't smoking any, which made me sad. I was like, you're just going to sit around it and not enjoy it?
Maybe she had an edible or something.
Well, she
it's
sure
just
needs
osmosis.
It.
Sometimes you just need to have it seep through your pores with the osmosis. That's what it was.
I sure hope so, because she's very stressed. You know, she feels a lot of guilt about Kendall, and she's just really freaking out and knows that she's dying. And Scott... So, Kevin, last week or a week or two ago, I said, I think that Scott might be, like, I don't know. I just don't know if I trust him. What, like, I know you can't tell us much, Kevin, and I don't know if you know anything.
But if you want to, hey.
We're here to listen to us and the rest of the internet.
Is that crazy that I think that?
Yeah, it is crazy that you think that.
Thank you.
But doesn't mean it's not true.
No, come on, bro.
It's not true. And that's the thing about the show is the crazier the thought, the more true it could be, you know. So
Scott is everything. Nobody.
The one thing we all know as actors on the show is that nobody is safe, and anybody can be anything. And it was especially so at the very beginning of the show when we didn't know who the male clone was going to be, we didn't know who the monitors were going to be. Like, we're as actors, we didn't know what that was, so we had to just sort of play everything very sort of across the board so that we didn't paint ourselves into corners. But I still think it's true to this day. It seems like everybody sort of has taken sides, and we know who's wearing the black hat, who's wearing the white hat. But I think there's still a whole lot out there that we don't know about, and that's left up to the brilliant and yet warped minds of John Fawcett and Graham Manson to let us know. So
look, that's fair.
It's crazy.
That's fair.
I mean, it's not true.
But nothing bad is allowed to happen to Scott, because he is my favorite. And this is the first time I've ever been mad at Cosima before. I was like, How dare you question Scott? Like, he is a beautiful soul, and he's so works so hard. He's been
He's
there
an
for
evil
the
nerd.
Whole time.
He has some secrets, girl. Come on.
I'm sure that he does, but to just be like, and now I have nobody.
Yeah.
It's so overdramatic and so just rude. Like, Scott is there for you. I believe Scott is, like, the one good person. Like, the one squeaky clean person on the show.
Well, look at the chat right now, Joelle. Look what the...
I don't care what the chat says.
Someone
love you, chat.
Said, Scott is... Or it was Jessica Iverson. Scott is the perfect ploy to be part of the main villain.
Look, I'm not going to disagree with you guys, but I don't need that in my life. I choose to believe that Scott is a pure and holy, like, good person.
I think there's bigger fish out, like, bigger bad guys... out there. I don't know.
We'll
I feel
see.
Like he's been committed to it too long.
Okay. Well, time will tell, guys, and I think maybe I should, like, bet you guys money after the thing.
She's really feeling strongly about this.
Because I really want to be right. But Cosima, so they have the bot that was in Sarah's cheek, and they do tests on it, and they're trying to figure it out, and then Cosima decides that it'd be a really good idea to just put it in her.
Good Lord. Talk about that downward spiral that all the clones are going through right now. Like,
I felt so bad for her.
I mean,
terrifying.
You're gonna die. What else do you... What do you have to lose? I kind of see her perspective on it.
She's being a martyr.
Yeah. Might as well try something, because, you know, you gotta... So
no. Once again, Felix coming to the rescue last second to be like, look, we don't know if your girlfriend's dead, which, you guys have started a hashtag, which was, oh my goodness, what's the girlfriend's name?
Delphine is alive.
Delphine is alive, yeah. Which you guys are beautiful and I love you. And you might be right. Delphine could be kicking it somewhere, which is so exciting. Kevin? Maybe? Delphine? No?
Have you seen Delphine around?
Delphine. Which one is that? Is that the one with the tail?
He's got jokes.
I will never forget that tail, honestly, though, still to this day. Every time I look at my cat and I see her tail wagging, I think of Orphan Black in that episode. I'm not kidding.
That's the worst.
Olivier, I know. That when we watched, I'm telling you, when we watched the screener, of that during season one, and we saw that the CGI, it wasn't even the effects weren't even completed yet, but we saw that tail wagging, we all went, oh my god. It was the craziest thing ever. Ugh. So anyway, well, I love that Delphine's not the one with the tail. I know who Delphine is. And I don't know where she's at. I don't know if she's alive. I don't know if she's dead. Once again, they don't tell me anything.
Mm-hmm. I bet she comes back. I'm going to say a prediction now because I'm too excited. I think she's coming back in the finale.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop that.
Final shot.
But different.
Not the Delphine we knew. New Delphine.
Yeah. Tail. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Delphine is coming back with a tail, guys.
Tail, baby.
Well, you know, speaking of the Neolution, all of that, you know, because we have Rachel still here. She's kicking it. She is finally let out. And she comes out, Susan tells her, like, everything's gone to shit, and I don't even care to kidnap you and lock you in anymore because, like, it doesn't matter. They're in a kind of dope place, apparently, the edge of the world.
Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. And some interesting stuff happens, including Rachel continuing to see this. It was a swan. Was it a swan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, that's a swan, right? It's a swan. And it will go in and out as though it's a computer screen, which is really cool and crazy and freaky. And, you know, we find
out. Through that new eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's because of the eye, I guess. And we find out some background about this doctor and that, you know, Susan piggybacked off him, and now Evie's piggybacking off of her stuff. So, karma.
Westmoreland, that was his name, right?
Westmoreland, yep.
Yeah.
And my theory about the swan is in the book that she was looking in before, it looked like Zeus rapes a woman as a swan at some point. And I really think that's where that swan's coming from that birth. I think you get Hercules. Which makes me, and there's a lot of like Greek mythology floating throughout Orphan Black. I have a feeling that this might be another clone baby, super baby, perhaps coming in the near future.
Helena.
Wow.
Wow.
Possible. Helena's got Hercules babies growing.
That's the Greek story of Leda and the swan, right?
There we go.
Yeah, so that's definitely where that comes from. But, you know, that's all I can say is say yes, you're right about the Greek mythology.
Leda! Yay! Dude, my mind is blown by you right now, Joelle.
I'm trying. I'm digging to you.
That's all I can say. Yes, Leda the swan.
Well, but, you know, it's awesome because we end on the swan, and it's really interesting. And this episode was insane. I loved it. Before we start wrapping up, we have a couple questions more for you, Kevin.
Okay.
All right, let's see. When you were first cast on this show from the beginning, and because you were here from day one and you started reading the scripts, was your mind as blown as everybody's was when they like watched the show the first season? Like, what the? Oh my. You can't even finish a sentence?
Yeah. It's because I wasn't on board when they were developing the show. Right. And I wasn't one of those people who had the opportunity to read the scripts ahead of time and had the opportunity to lobby and tell my agent, I have to be a part of this show, dude. I auditioned for the show with a couple scenes on the pages, and that was it. It was just another audition in the millions of auditions I've done over the course of my career. But it wasn't until I had actually booked the show, I had been cast, that I started to get the scripts. And I'd heard as I was going through the audition gauntlet, that the show, there was some buzz about it in the industry. But once I actually got cast and started reading, you know, about three or four episodes, I realized, oh, this is kind of special. This is kind of great. Like the pilot was dynamite, right? Like the pilot, just like when you see it on the screen, gets you in the first page.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way it's described and the way Graham wrote it is amazing. And then, you know, it reads exactly the way in which it was shot. So it was brilliant that way. But the scripts just kept coming. you know, and they just kept getting better and better and better and better. So I realized it was something special. But then the pressure starts to build up. You're like, this is a really great script. I hope I'm not the one who screws it up. You know what I mean? But I think fortunately we, you know, although we were all, you know, scared as hell as we started off this whole thing, I think we managed to pull it together well. And, you know, four seasons later, we're still doing it. So that's a testament to the writing and the acting, and the entire production team and crew has just been amazing. Amazing. So, yeah, it's been a great treat. And as I said, from the moment I started reading them, I knew they were great. And the people who had read them before I did knew they were great as well. So, yeah, it's been a treat.
Well, a quick little segue, because we have an awesome plug we need to give.
Yes, sponsors today, which is super exciting. We have Chapman University, which is located in Orange County, California. It's 16 miles from the beach, a little over 30 miles from Los Angeles, and minutes from Disneyland and Angel Stadium, which, I mean, guys, dope. You spend a lot of time in college. You should be able to get to your places very quickly. Wow. It's a tree-lined 75-acre campus. It's in the heart of the historical city of Orange. There's only 8,000 students enrolled in undergraduate and graduate programs. They're best known for film and television, business, science, technology, education, health, science, and arts. 10 different schools and colleges, more than 100 different majors and programs. There is literally something for everyone. In terms of free time, there's a lot to do on campus and off. They are close to 200 clubs and student organizations on campus. Chapman University is a comprehensive university that still provides personalized attention for its students, which is really hard to get if you go to a big school. Classes are small. Student-faculty ratio is 14 to 1. There are literally dozens of opportunities to study abroad for short trips or for entire semesters. Best part? 86% of students benefit from some kind of financial aid, so you don't have to do this all by yourself. Guys, head over to www.chapman.edu/information. Again, that's www.chapman.edu/information for more info.
Yeah. Cool.
Just got to make sure, you know, we gave Chapman a shout out because it is an amazing university and is very intense in the arts and entertainment, which obviously is very related to us.
Yes. Yes.
So, guys, check it out. One more question before we leave you, Kevin.
Yeah.
What has been a really fun slash, like, favorite memory out of these four seasons on set? You know, a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. Funny scene or, you know, working with all the clones.
I wish I could – I always wish I could have a specific memory that I – you know, honestly, I think I have to there's a couple. Like, after season one, we were in the makeup trailer when what the first time we started hearing about, you know, Tat getting nominated for awards and the show getting nominated for awards, right? And, you know, when you shoot a first season, you're hoping that you're hoping that the first season airs. you're hoping it gets picked up for a second season next. And you know, now that we're, you know, four seasons later, it's just, it's amazing. But the fact that we've been actually, you know, nominated, not just Tat, but the show and several of us supporting actors have also been nominated as well, was just amazing. But the first time that we actually heard these nominations come in, we were all sort of together in the makeup trailer. And that was like, we all sort of had a collective, you know, moment where we realized we're actually kind of doing something special here. That was great. I wish I had something funny now as opposed to something sad.
No, that's so sweet. That's like, perfect.
Like, oh, yeah. God. No, that's very heartwarming. Yeah.
She needs, you know, that what? Emmy.
Honestly, yes. The only other thing really quickly is that I can't come up with one specific moment because there's just so many. Like, the set is such a fun place to be. The tone is fantastic and it's one of fun and play, and there's so much improv that happens. Not so much with art because, you know, I'm not the comedic, you know, that's more for like Christian and Jordan and Tat and her many characters. But if ever there's something we want to just let the camera roll and improv, that's always we always have the option to do that. And that's sort of where the gold of the show comes out. So there's a lot of fun moments that happen as a result of that, just hearing what people say, because people are so talented and so witty. So I think we all just sort of love punching the clock and being at work every day.
Awesome. God, I wish I
want to be there.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, I want to go. All right, Kevin, thank you so, so much for being here with us from Canada. We appreciate it. We really adore
it's
you.
It's hot up here. I want everybody in America to know. Come on up. Have a good time. There's lots to see. We used to have a basketball team. that just went out a couple days ago, but it's still good.
Hey, Toronto is one of my favorite cities, it's actually. It's amazing. It's never been. So much fun. It's really is.
So Chicago great. Of the north, man.
I love Degrassi, though, so. Well,
yeah. You know what? No hate on Canada. We love Canada. Yes. All right. Again, thank you, Kevin. Thank you guys all so much for tuning in. And we will see you next week. This has been so much fun.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye, Kevin.
Bye, guys.
All right.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.